an understanding of what value is, so that their kids can be make better choices later on. So we played, they read Rich Dad Poor Dad, they played Cash Flow for Kids. So those were some of the methods that we utilized.
You're listening to Ice Cream with Investors, a podcast that is dedicated to teaching you how to better invest your money so that you can live a more intentional life. I'm your host, Matt Four, and it is my goal to teach and empower you to remove the roadblocks to your financial success.
All right, Garrett, Ted, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us on.
You got it. Well, we like to start with the difficult questions here. What's your favorite ice cream? Garrett, we'll start with you.
I like Rocky Road.
Okay. Ted, how about you?
Well, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree here. Rocky Road was the first thing that popped into my head, but Rocky Road as well, just because it's chocolate and then you have marshmallows and then other little chocolate pieces in there. So Rocky Road for sure.
So I've been to Reno a couple times. The next time I'm out in that area, where is the best ice cream spot we can hit up when we're in Reno?
Well, it's funny because Dad used to have an ice cream business.
So I did.
I would have said that, but gosh.
I've lost track. We had a store up at the university, and that was the best ice cream store in Reno. And then it got shut down.
Yeah, I had somebody on the show the other week, and I forgot where it was, but they said that their university actually has the largest creamery. So you're following a trend here with universities having the best ice cream stores.
Well, I'll tell you, the University of Missouri has a great ice cream store, and so does Washington State. So I will mention those two.
Yep. Gotcha. Well, tell us the scoop. What do you all do today?
Go ahead, Ted. You're the new guy.
Yep. So as you know, I'm the new guy. I also happen to be an attorney and I work with Dad. We specialize in business law. So we help people set up LLCs and we help people maintain them, you know, perform the annual filings, draft documentation, all of that. On top of that, we help with asset protection. And now with the new Corporate Transparency Act in place, we've been helping our clients prepare those filings as well. So pretty much in a bundle of anything corporate law and business related, that's what we do.
Perfect. Well, I think one of the best benefits of having a podcast is I get free hour of consultation about attorney stuff and get all my questions answered. And I've got a list of them.
Pretty smart.
Before we get into it, Garrett, take us back. How did you get in this business?
Well, I became an attorney and then became very fortunate to be associated with Robert Kiyosaki, the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I've worked with Robert for over 20 years. We've traveled the world. Ted's been on some of the trips to Chile and Australia. And, you know, traveling the world with people, I've come to realize that all over the world, parents want their kids to understand money and finances. And that's one of the reasons Ted wrote his new book. And just part of Robert's team was to have someone that could help people understand the need for asset protection, why you need to set these entities up right at the start. If you operate in your individual name, you're going to be personally responsible until you set up that LLC, which can help limit your liability. So that's how I got started. And then Ted decided to come along.
Yeah. Now, Ted, I was reading a little bit about your background. You originally went to college not to be an attorney. Tell us a little bit about your background and kind of what you do today.
Yep. So I went to college and I studied mining engineering while I was there. You know, I'm actually a pretty big geography nerd and I'm big into earth science. And so I went to college. Originally, I was doing biomedical engineering, but after a semester, I said no. Switched over to mining. And, you know, it's an interesting field. I liked learning about the stuff. But before I graduated, the summer before I left, I worked at a mine in Chile. And it was a great experience. I met a lot of cool people. And I actually did have a good time there. But ultimately, I knew deep down that it wasn't necessarily a career path that I don't think I would be the happiest in. You know, I respect people in the mining industry, like, you know, everything we have here comes from a mine. But at the end of the day, I knew that it wasn't the path forward. So my dad convinced me to go to law school, you know, take two bar exams and then work for him. And, you know, it was the master plan and it all worked out. So that's my background. You know, I switched gears after college, went to law school, and haven't looked back since.
Yeah, so I've found another geography and geology nerd. So to my fiance who listens to all of these, this is why I'm late for dinner tonight, because Ted and I are actually still nerding out about geography.
Oh, yeah.
But you mentioned a little bit about asset protection. So I want to start there. A lot of questions I get from new investors who buy their first rental property or their fifth rental property is all about an LLC and how do I protect my assets? I think that if you're involved in this business, it's not a matter of if you're going to get sued, it's a matter of when, and making sure that you cover your assets is a very important thing. So Garrett, I'll flip it to you to start us off. Give us the high level. When should I have an LLC? What does an LLC help me do as a real estate investor?
Well, you should have an LLC right at the start. We're the most litigious society. We have more attorneys per capita than anywhere else on earth. Attorneys get a percentage of what they can collect from you on the contingency fee system that we have. You and I aren't going to change that, Matt. So we just have to operate within the system. And the system allows us to set up LLCs, and in some cases you'd use an LP, but the limited liability company to take title to real estate, to take title to a brokerage account, gold and silver, is a great way to protect your assets. Because if you get in a car wreck, for example, and hopefully you have insurance, I always recommend you have an umbrella policy of insurance for extra coverage. But if that claim is high and they want to get at your real estate holdings or your brokerage holdings, and they're in a good state LLC, Nevada and Wyoming in particular, if they're in a strong state LLC, it's very difficult for them to get at those assets. So that's why we want to set up the LLC right at the start and continue to maintain it. And that's just as important as forming it. You've got to pay the fees to the state. And now with this new Corporate Transparency Act, you've got to file this filing with the federal government. But as long as you do take these simple steps, you're going to be protected, and it's going to be very difficult for someone to get at your assets.
Great answer. I just want to debunk a myth here. An LLC has nothing really to do with how you get taxed as much as, in my opinion, how you're structured from a legal protection standpoint. Obviously, there's ways you can file your taxes in an LLC that change how you get taxed. But I have all the time, hey, I bought this one property and I'm going to set up an LLC because I want to reduce my tax benefits. Just to set that aside, there's no real tax benefits to doing it that way. It's just corporate.
No, you're not doing it for the tax benefits. If it's an NAD, in most cases, the tax obligation flows through the LLC right onto your personal return. So you're not doing it for the tax benefits. You're doing it for the asset protection. And that's where if title to the duplex is in your individual name, and you get sued, someone can reach it. If it's in the name of the LLC, it's much more difficult for them to reach it. But to your point, Matt, you're not going to reach any different tax results by using an LLC over just being an individual taxpayer.
Now, Ted, coming back to you, you got your law degree at the University of Wyoming, and we oftentimes hear Wyoming and Nevada are the absolute best states to have an LLC. Can you talk us through what's the logic behind why you hear Nevada and Wyoming on every social media channel?
Yeah, for sure. So they're advantageous in a few situations, and we like using them in different situations. Nevada's good because they do have the charging order protection, but Wyoming has this weird franchise fee. So what we recommend doing is if you have like a stock portfolio or you have paper assets that are worth more than $2 million, Wyoming has a weird franchise fee where it's a fraction of a dollar or, you know, fraction of cents. So we calculated it to where if you have more than $2 million in assets, it's best to have a Nevada LLC. And with that Nevada LLC, you still have the charging order protection. So that means if you get sued personally and that other person were to win in court, they can only get a charging order on the LLC that holds the assets. And it makes it much more difficult for them to reach them because In order for them to collect anything, you need to make distributions. So when you have a big stock portfolio or anything with paper assets, we recommend a Nevada LLC. But in most other situations, we like using a Wyoming LLC. And there's three reasons for that. The first is that it's very affordable to set up. It only costs $100 to form, and the annual filing fees are only $62 a year. The second thing is that your name is not listed on the Wyoming Secretary of State's website, so there's a level of anonymity there. There's a level of privacy. The third thing is that Wyoming also has the charging order protection where, you know, if you're sued and you lose in court, they get a charging order, but they have to wait until distributions are made out of the LLC in order to collect. And, you know, I should mention that there is a lot of talk about Delaware. But the thing with Delaware is that they do have these quarterly reporting requirements. So it makes it a little bit more onerous to have an LLC set up there. But, you know, as I mentioned, we like Wyoming and Nevada for the reasons that I laid out.
And Matt, if I could just, you know, put context to this. When we were starting the company, the country rather, you know, the founding fathers, some people wanted a national corporate law. And, you know, James Madison argued for a national corporate law. But the other people from the other states, you know, one of the entities we fought during the Revolution was the British East India Company. It was this giant corporation. And a lot of the people from the states wanted their own state corporate law so they could deal with this giant corporation, if it ever came back again, on their own terms. And so as a result, we have 50 state corporate laws, and the states compete against each other to have the best law. And so we have Nevada, Wyoming, Delaware, all competing to be the best. And that's good for us as investors. You know, we like the fact that these states are willing to try and be the best to gain the filing fees. It's a revenue source for them. But the fact that these states compete against each other is good for investors.
You just said $62 filing fee. I just got done filing for my LLCs just a few days ago, and you've already perked up my ears on how many thousands of dollars I could save just by filing in Wyoming. But this idea of anonymity. So talk me through, Ted, like, why is that important that I not show up, my personal name not show up in the state filings? Isn't having an LLC good enough?
Well, having an LLC is good, but, you know, some people want an additional layer of privacy. You know, when you hold title to rental properties, you see that it's, I don't know, let's say, for example, you have a rental property in Texas, it's owned by a Wyoming LLC. They see the Wyoming LLC owns the Texas, and then they go to Wyoming and they don't see your name. You know, and that gives people a level of comfort just because, you know, if the tenant were to sue, they could see the name on the, you know, on another state's website, for instance, and it would be much easier for them to find, you know, where they live and other information about them. So having a level of privacy can help. Just because it provides an additional roadblock for people to get to the individuals. And it also provides a sense of security for investors out there.
But I will add that you want to have that insurance because, you know, if a tenant's suing, they can serve the LLC. They may not know who the owner is, but the fact that you have an insurance policy is key because if the tenant sues, you want to get notice right away through your registered agent, and we provide this service in all 50 states. You want to get that notice right away so you can turn it over to your insurance company and they can defend you. So a lot of people on the internet are claiming that privacy is the be-all end-all. And for me, it's the structure. It's the fact you have the LLC, you have an insurance policy, and if you do get sued, you're going to turn it over to your insurance company and let them defend you. So let's not get too confused with privacy and anonymity.
Yeah, I would love to hear both of your opinions on this, but I just equate it to you're just trying to make an obstacle course. Right. If I am an attorney who's representing somebody who's trying to sue a property owner or an LLC, What I'm trying to do is find an easy win so I can go on to my next one. As you mentioned, you get a percentage of whatever you collect. And if I have things like debt on the property, liens on the property, privacy, extra insurance policies, all these sorts of things, then I'm making it more difficult and I'm making it more likely that the opposing counsel is going to say, let's go to the next one. Let's find a different case.
Good strategy.
So the next thing I want to get into is this idea of a corporate veil. So when we set up an LLC, that's not the end all be all. There are still things that we have to do as owners of the LLC to make sure that we are keeping a veil or a shield up for the corporation. Garrett, could you talk us through, like, what is a corporate veil? And then what are some of the things that we need to make sure that we do to keep that veil there?
Well, it's really important. I wrote a recent book on it. Veil.
No plug.
And so, raise a good question, Matt, because a lot of people think they set up the corporation, they're automatically protected. But you have these ongoing obligations that you have to follow in order to stay protected. And so that's paying the fees to the state every year. It's having a registered agent on board. It's making sure that in your contracts and all your dealings with tenants that you list LLC, that it's XYZ LLC. So they can't say, geez, I thought I was doing business with Matt as an individual. You know, you want to provide that corporate notice. You also want to make sure that you have a separate bank account for the LLC or corporation. You can't run everything through your personal account. That's a great way to get your veil pierced. Now, when they pierce the veil, it means that they have a claim against the corporation. The corporation doesn't have enough money. They haven't followed the rules. And so they pierce through the corporate veil of protection and could get at your personal assets. And so you set up an LLC to avoid that. And by failing to follow the formalities, they can do it anyway. And Matt, 50% of the time in court cases, the veil is pierced. So a lot of people aren't following these formalities, which is, of course, why I wrote the book, just to help people understand how they can do it.
Yeah, and that book is Veil, Not Fail. Shamelessly plug away here. I was kidding
One
with
more
that.
Time. Yeah, Veil, Not Fail.
There you go. We'll link it all in the show notes and all those sorts of things. But yeah, it's funny you mentioned 50%. My attorney will tell you I'm so scared of breaking this commingling funds and all those sorts of things that I won't send myself distributions without saying, hey, I'm about to send myself a distribution in an email trail so that it's very clear that this is a distribution, not commingling funds.
Good.
You at the beginning of the show, you all mentioned the Corporate Transparency Act. So this is going to be applicable for some listeners out there that have LLCs and own real estate properties. It is also more important for fund managers out there and people that are very active in this state, in this space. Ted, take us from the high level. What is the Corporate Transparency Act and what do we need to know about it?
Yeah, so the Corporate Transparency Act, it's not just going to apply to some of your listeners. It's going to apply to most of them. So the Corporate Transparency Act, it was passed on January 1st, 2021, and it took effect on January 1st of 2024 this year, 2 months ago. And it's a new federal disclosure law that requires small businesses. Now, this is important because a lot of the federal regulations have targeted big businesses, but the Corporate Transparency Act specifically targets small businesses. And it requires them to report information to the federal government. The specific governing body is called FinCEN. It stands for the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, and it's a branch of the U.S. Department of the Treasury. So these small businesses are going to have to report three pieces of information. The first is the reporting company information. So any information about the company itself, where it's located, EIN numbers, all that. The second piece is beneficial ownership information. So any individual who owns an interest in those companies, if you have 25% ownership interest or more, or you have substantial control, which means management, then you would have to report that. And then the third piece is company applicant information. This is only for new entities, but if you help set up the company, you're going to have to report information to FinCEN too. The timing varies on when you set up the entity, But the biggest takeaway is that if you don't file, this law has some really big teeth to it. If you don't perform your filings and submit them to FinCEN, you can face up to $10,000 in fines and or 2 years in jail if you willfully ignore the law. So it's really important that people know about it, because a lot of people aren't talking about it, and a lot of people thus far haven't reported information. So it's really important that we get the word out there, because the last thing I want to happen is for people to be footed with a $10,000 bill, you know, when they're innocent and they didn't do anything wrong. They just didn't hear about it.
Yeah. I think I remember hearing that it was $10,000 a day. Is that right? Or was I just having a nightmare?
It's five. So you have 30 days to get the information in. Well, it varies. So earlier companies, it's a year. 2024 is 90 days. 2025 and after is 30. But if that time period passes, it's $500 a day up until the $10,000 limit. So, you know, it does escalate, but it stops at $10,000.
Gotcha. And I'm assuming that's per LLC, though.
Per entity, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Which can rack up pretty quickly if you own a few properties.
Definitely.
Right.
Yeah.
So I wanted to mention the timeline. So if you have an entity that was formed in 2023 or before, you've got the whole year to file. I wouldn't wait until November or December, because there's going to be this crush of people trying to file. There's this misinformation out there on the internet that the law is going to be repealed after the election. There's not enough time to repeal the law. It's going to be in effect. So you want to file it at least, you know, in September, October. We're helping our clients file right now, just so you get it over with. So that's if you have an entity prior to 2024. This year, as Ted said, you've got 90 days to file. And in 2025, you've got 30 days to file. Now, if you're doing a syndication, you set up the LP and you don't know who the owners are yet, it takes 6 months to figure out who the owners are going to be. So you would file in 2025 after the 30 days, you would file who the owners are at that time. And then once you bring on the investors, you have an obligation to amend the filing, and you would add the investors who are 25% or more on at that time. You also have to amend. You don't have to file every year, but if changes occur, you have to amend your filing. One of the requirements is that you have to provide FinCEN with a not only your driver's license or passport number, but an image of the actual driver's license or passport. So this database is going to have images of really key documents. So if your driver's license expires in 2026 and you get a new one, you've got to amend your filing to get them the new driver's license information and the new image of the driver's license. So we're helping our clients get through this because we have a database with a tickler system, and we're going to go back to our clients and say, look, your driver's license is expiring this year. We need to amend the filing. I personally don't like this law, but we want to keep our clients compliant with it. We don't want anybody to get any fines from it.
I think you just highlighted one of my big philosophies as well, is when I find an attorney and an accountant or a specialist that's really helping me with my business, I try to throw as much to them as within their specialty, for the reason you just mentioned. What I don't want to do is like, oh, this LLC is with Garrett, this LLC is with Ted, and then Garrett's got a process down, but Ted doesn't, and I've amended it over here, and I haven't amended it over here. So just as a general rule, like if you're doing something in business and you find a good specialist, try to align all of your things with them so you don't have to think about it. It's just this person's who's responsible for this. Hey, fellow investors, before we dive into our next segment of the show, I wanted to take a quick moment to talk to you about a fantastic opportunity for you to invest with me. As you know, here at Ice Cream with Investors, I'm passionate about real estate investing and helping you navigate the exciting world of wealth creation through real estate. And that's why, for the first time, I'm thrilled to tell you about an opportunity for you to invest alongside of me. Over the past 3 years, I've been investing in multifamily, mobile home parks, car washes. I've even become the bank and lent out money to fellow real estate investors on a short-term basis. And now you can come join me. If you'd like to jump on a call and learn more about this opportunity, head to icecreamwithinvestors.com/invest and find a time for us to connect. And now back to the show.
Yeah, we try to provide the one-stop shop for, you know, corporate formation and maintenance. And a lot of people don't appreciate the subtleties of this new Corporate Transparency Act and the need to keep your filings updated. So we're providing that service for our clients.
Yeah, I've already gotten way more information here than I have in the past 3 months. So really appreciate the time. This is, again, one of the benefits of being on this side of the show is I get to hear all this information. Ted, I want to switch us to the book that you wrote. So, 5 Tricks to Teach Your Kids About Money. We have a 5 and a 7-year-old. We're still learning this process of the value of a dollar and chores and things that they can do around the house. So it's not just, oh, I want this and mommy or daddy are saying, no, you can't buy that. It's how can you go afford it? Give us a high level over the book. What's it about and why'd you write it?
Yeah, so as you know, they don't teach financial education in school. And you know, that's the reason why Kiyosaki's Rich Dad Poor Dad has sold 30 million copies. There's a huge void in the education system there, and people are craving that information. But one of the things I've noticed, and this is a question that's been raised a lot, is how do you teach kids about money? You know, specifically, how do you teach kids? So I came up with 5 tricks that you can use to teach your kids about money. Now, I should mention that they're not mean pranks that you're going to pull on them. You know, you're not going to play a trick, but they're methods that you can use to educate your kids to boost their financial IQ. So, you know, for example, one of them setting up a lemonade stand, making sure they get business experience, you know, understanding how to make money, how to spend it properly. So, you know, that's one of the tricks. And then for the other 4, if you head on over to sunstream.com/5tricks, just type that into the address bar. You can download the book. It's totally free. And it's only about 20 pages. So it's a very quick read, but there's a lot of good information in there. And the whole goal is to boost kids' financial IQ. And I think that the book does that.
And Sunstream is with 2 N's. So it's S-U-N-N, stream.com. And this is a streaming platform that we're putting forward to, you know, provide music and entertainment, but also to help kids learn about money. So we want to entertain the kids, but we also want to educate them.
Yeah. Now, Garrett, when you were raising kids in your household, were there any things that you did when they were, I don't know, 5 and 7 to help them like really understand the value of a dollar? And let me say this. Shep wanted this watch and we said, hey, you know, that costs $100. So if you get to $50, we will split half of it basically with you. And we pay $1 for chores, $5 a week for chores in our household. And, you know, week 1 goes by, he's got $5. Week 2 goes by, he's got $10. Week 3 goes by and he goes, man, this is just going to take me forever. And I said, well, let me teach you something. Like the value, the richest people in the world create the most value. So what is something that you think people would value in our neighborhood that you could go do? And on a hot summer day, 100 degrees outside, he'd take some lemonade outside and some cookies that we made and start selling them. He was chasing people down the street. He was overcoming objections with, we have a Square app, all those sorts of things. And he made $40 in like an hour and a half. First of all, I've never been so proud as a dad. But second of all, it really taught him this idea of like money comes from creating value in the world. So I'm wondering if you have any stories like that or anything that you could share about kind of how you taught your family how to
well, know about. You know, Matt, I was so lucky that I was able to have my kids travel with Robert Kiyosaki. I mean, not everybody can say that, but, you know, Ted and his twin sisters learned from Robert Kiyosaki. They read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. We started to talk about money. And, you know, another great way to teach them about money was every time they asked for something, I said, no, you know, I mean, so if you want something, you could earn it, right? but I'm not going to give you every single thing you want. There's a value to things. And I think by saying no to your kids, that's a valuable lesson. I mean, people forget they're the parent, not the friend. And they need to be parents and they need to provide valuable lessons and an understanding of what value is so that their kids can make better choices later on. So we played, they read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. They played Cash Flow for Kids. So those were some of the methods that we utilized.
Yep.
All right.
Just taking
a quick note here. What was the word you said again to them?
It begins with N and it ends with O.
Okay. Quick note, quick mental note over here. I'll jot that one down. Go ahead, Ted. What were you saying?
Oh yeah. You know, we did play Cash Flow and, you know, we traveled with Robert. But he also made me collect, the coins of the laundry machines at an apartment that he owned. So, you know, that was a little bit more subtle, right? Because it's like, oh, well, this is generating X amount of dollars a month. So that was kind of a, you know, indirect, hidden message that, you know, taught me that it's important to have more than one source of income.
Yeah, it's cool that you guys got to go see properties together. Our son now knows what I do, and we took him to one of the complexes we have here in Nashville and drive into soccer the other day. He's like, oh, Mr. Matt, can you buy that property right there? Can you buy this house? Can you buy that land? So he's a little overzealous with what he thinks is an opportunity right now, but at least he's starting to think about it.
Great. That's great.
Guys, I want to switch us now to our last round. We call this the four toppings. Our first, and we'll just go Garrett, Ted in each one of these. Our first one, Garrett, is what is your favorite book or what is a book you've read recently that's given you a paradigm shift?
Well, one of my favorite books is Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I mean, I've recommended it to so many people. And, you know, we're on the phone with people, Matt, all the time that have read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's changed their way to view things. And we're helping them set up LLCs and corporations. So that for me is one of the great books out there.
Awesome. Ted, how about you?
Yeah, for me, I would say obviously Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but I think it's a tie between two books. I think the first is The Richest Man in Babylon or The Richest Man of Babylon. You know, I think it's good because it does instill really good messages that are very easy to understand. And another one is The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. It's by Stephen Covey. His grandson played for the University of Utah football team where I went to college. So, you know, I might be a little bit biased there, but there are some good things in that book that people can use to better themselves. So I would say it's between those two.
Yeah. Stephen Covey does a lot of great articles and books and messages around leadership in general too. So
yeah.
Our second one is what is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Well, for me, it's and Robert mentioned it and other mentors have mentioned it. It's not about the money. You do the best thing you can. You provide the best service you can, the best product you can, and the money will follow. And so too many people are concerned about the money up front. And, you know, it's prudent to be concerned about it. But you have to put yourself out there and provide the best service you can, and then the money will follow.
And for me, I think sort of building off that, it's very important to be consistent. You know, my dad has been my de facto mentor, whether I like it or not, for almost 29 years. You know, and one of the things I've noticed from him is that he's very consistent. You know, he comes into work every day. He has written 12 or God knows more books. But the reason he's done that is because he's been consistent. And, you know, with me going to law school, taking 2 bar exams, going into work, it's important to just have a consistent routine that you stick to. Because if you stick to it, you'll get into good habits and you'll get stuff done. So I think definitely being consistent is number one.
You could tell you're a listener of the show, Ted, because that's something I preach all the time is that consistency will beat talent over the long run. I can't tell you how long, but it will beat talent over the long run. So as long as you remain consistent, you will get there.
Well, that's how I won in high school sports too. Like in tennis, I was the guy who consistently hit it back. Ski racing, I was the guy who consistently finished. So I would totally second that.
There you go. Our third one is, what are you most proud of in your life?
My kids. Yeah, more than the books, more than anything else. Just, you know, having a great family is means everything.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would say family too. You know, as much as they may drive me crazy on occasion, not all the time.
No.
On occasion, but, you know, my parents are both role models, you know, with my dad. My mom's a doctor. My sisters are doing really well. And so they definitely push me to be a better person. So definitely family.
Yeah, I'm diving into some entrepreneurship stuff right now. And it's funny how all of them down to a T say every 60-year-old, 70-year-old, when they get later in their life, they always come back to family was the thing that they were most proud of.
Yeah.
Our fourth and final one is, if you could sit down and eat a bowl of ice cream with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
George Washington.
Why?
I would love to meet that guy. He was a stud. I mean, the men loved him. The women loved him. He would be the guy I'd have a bowl of ice cream with.
I like it. I like it. And with wooden teeth, he wouldn't have to worry about his teeth getting frozen.
It wouldn't get cold.
Yeah. Yeah. Ted, how about you?
You know, I'll go with someone. There's a lot of people I could choose from. I'll go with someone who's alive today. Probably Elon Musk. You know, he's definitely a crazy guy, but... You know, he's the dude who, I don't know if he said it or not, but he said those who are crazy enough to think they can change the world actually do. And you've seen what he's done with Tesla. You know, the factory's only 30 minutes from here. You see what he's done with SpaceX. I mean, you've seen just the impact that he's had. So I think it'd be interesting to sort of pick his brain and get into his psyche. And, you know, see what his outlook on life is, because I think that would be a really interesting conversation.
I bet his ice cream would be out of this world. little dad joked in this there.
Yeah. You do a baked Alaska with the Boring Company flamethrower too. Yeah.
Yep. Well, guys, fantastic conversation. If our listeners wanted to reach out to you, find a copy of 5 Tricks to Teach Kids About Money, or just learn more about what you all do, where's the best place we can point them?
Well, our main website is corporatedirect.com, and you can go there. We offer a free 15-minute consultation with an incorporating specialist, so you can talk to someone and see if we can help you. And then Ted's book is at Sunstream, S-U-N-N, stream.com /5 tricks, and you can download the book for free. You can see what we're offering at Sunstream, and so have at it there at Sunstream.
And to add on to that, Corporate Direct has a YouTube channel. I post weekly videos there, so if you head on over to YouTube, type Corporate Direct into the search bar, you'll find it. Please subscribe to the channel. I post there weekly. I want to get to 100,000 subscribers. And then also, if you have a comment about anything corporate law related, you can comment on one of my videos and I'd be happy to get around to it.
Perfect. We will link all those in the show notes. And then guys, thanks for coming on.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to Ice Cream with Investors. If you like what we serve you here, it would mean the world to me if you would like, subscribe, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app.